This audio was recorded at the 10th anniversary remembrance in honor of those still incarcerated at Guantanamo. The meeting was jointly organized by Cage Prisoners, Reprieve, and the Islamic Human Rights Commission, and was held in London's Conway Hall on Wednesday, the 11th of January, 2012. The meeting began with the recording of a song and a live chant from the Quran, both by former detainees. The meeting and speakers were introduced by Victoria Britton.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Conway Hall. for this evening of remembrance and respect for the 171 men still held in the lawless zone of Guantanamo Bay, and also for the many prisoners who have passed through that place in the last 10 years. Several of them, many of them, are here with us tonight, and a particular welcome to them this evening is theirs. There would have been more of them, but you can imagine that visa problems proved insurmountable in some cases. The Quran recitation that you've just heard was done by one of the former prisoners, a Moroccan-Belgian, Moussa Zamouri, who was released from Guantanamo in 2005. And the Nasheed song that you heard while you were sitting down just before was sent by another one, who is from Bahrain, Abu Suleiman, and he's very, very famous in the Arab world for his Nasheed songs, particularly the ones about Guantanamo Bay, and some iconic songs that he's written about that terrible victim of the war on terror, Dr. Athia Siddiqui, the Pakistani neuroscientist who was sentenced to 86 years in an American prison. A verdict which American lawyers who watched the case described as absolutely shocking, shocking. A travesty. You're going to hear a lot more about injustice this evening. And I believe that each of us will leave this evening with a different idea about our individual moral responsibility to do more than any of us have ever done to end the horror that is Guantanamo Bay. And it's nice that this hall is full, but we're far from alone in our act of remembrance. In Guantanamo Bay, the prisoners have done a 3-day hunger strike, and some of them are doing sit-downs. In Kuwait today, there was a very large demonstration outside the American embassy led by the father of a prisoner who's still there. Khalid Al-Auda is the father's name. Fawzi is the son. And by other former prisoners. And in the United States, there are several dozen men and women dressed in orange suits, each of them representing one individual who is still in Guantanamo Bay. And they've been on a 10-day hunger strike in Washington. Before we start, I want to read you a few words written specially to mark these 10 shameful years by one of the Algerian former prisoners, whose name will be familiar to any lawyers and many others of you. It's on one of the most important pieces of litigation that was taken against former President Bush. The former prisoner's name is Lakhdar Boumediene. And this is what he wrote about his torture. "These are things I do not want to write about. I want only to forget. I do not like to think about Guantanamo. The memories are filled with pain. But I share my story because 171 men remain there. Among them is Belkacem Ben Saya, who was seized with me in Bosnia and sent to Guantanamo with me. Now, I know that every former prisoner who's here tonight shares exactly these same feelings. All of them are here despite their own pain, despite their own wish to forget, because of those 171, who include, of course, their dear friends. Let the rest of us who will never know this pain honor them for their dignity, their courage, and their loyalty to those 171. Now, our first speaker is a man that you all know. He sacrificed his own personal feelings and his time to tireless public work ever since he was released from Guantanamo in 2005. He's director of Cage Prisoners, which is the lead organization behind this evening's event. He has been the voice in this country to tell people what Guantanamo has meant and still means today for hundreds of families. Also, he's been the key figure in trying to shame politicians, not only here, but in many other countries, into accepting as refugees the innocent prisoners, like himself, who were long since cleared by the US military, but are today still locked up. Mozambique.
In the name of Allah, most compassionate, most merciful. Thank you, Victoria, for the introduction. It's 10 years since the day when those first images of men in orange suits kneeling in laptop goggles. I was taken and kidnapped from my own home in front of my own family. I saw those images and they had been embedded in my mind. And when I was told in the back of a vehicle with a hood over my head that had just been lifted by two Americans dressed very badly as Pakistanis, that I would be sent to Guantanamo, I thought they were joking. They weren't joking. One of the men who shackled me said, taking these handcuffs out, that I was given these handcuffs by one of the wives of the September 11 victims to go and catch the perpetrators, and then he proceeded to put them on my hands. And I realized then that I was, and we were, up against the world's most powerful intelligence agency, the world's most powerful law enforcement agencies, the FBI and the CIA, and of course our own MI5, who were lurking in the background constantly, always there at every leg of the journey, appearing and reappearing, haunting like ghosts or the spooks that we're told that they are. And it became evident to me that the hope that I felt from seeing a Briton, even if he was from the intelligence services, quickly faded away because I knew that they were in it together. And I know, in my case at least, and I know in the case of many others, that I wouldn't have gone to Guantanamo had it not been for my own government and my own people, people who are supposed to represent my interests, not the interests of the United States of America. But what I really want to say here is the 10 years that we're marking as former Guantanamo prisoners, we say, by the grace of God, alhamdulillah, we are free. The 171 that are still there have yet to begin a new ordeal. Not the ordeal of incarceration, but the ordeal of freedom. For those of us, wherever you happen to have been held and taken from, who are released, have to face things that we are not prepared for and live that every single day, in addition to what's known as the survivor's guilt. The unsung heroes of all of this and the people whose pain has not been felt properly or understood by society is those innocent women and children who've had to live lives without a father, without a husband, without a male figure, a family that's been shattered into, not allowed to continue to go on, and not allowed to go back to what it is that they loved so much, but to remain in limbo that has destroyed some minds and has polluted the thoughts of some of the children towards even their own fathers. That isn't the fault of the children. That isn't the fault of the prisoners. That isn't the fault of the mothers. That is the fault of the people who continue to keep the men in Guantanamo and those who think that they're doing enough by telling us through lip service that we are doing everything that we can to have those men released. 10 years of Guantanamo means, for me, 10 years of torture, cruel, abusive and degrading treatment, solitary confinement, 10 years of children who were sent to Guantanamo who have grown now into men, 10 years of amputees who had their limbs amputated in Guantanamo, 10 years of hearing every now and then that somebody has died and conveniently committed suicide, or as they call it, asymmetric warfare. 10 years of lies, 10 years of broken promises, 10 years of people saying that we want to close Guantanamo, we are against Guantanamo, in order to earn themselves some brownie points, but in reality the world is complicit, every single one of us. Because if Guantanamo was so bad, then whoever threatened the United States with sanctions if they don't close it? Whoever called for that? Which statesman, which politician ever said that there will be some sort of repercussion for holding people in this manner and destroying their lives? The language 10 years after isn't that these are innocent men, isn't that you are innocent until proven guilty, but rather it is that these people are still terrorism suspects, whether they are still there or whether they are free and released. We, as a group of people, are the most vetted people on the planet. Nobody's been vetted like us. Nobody's been interrogated like us. Not by the CIA and the MI5 and military intelligence and FBI. Nobody has been. And yet, still wherever we go, oh, there's a big question mark over you. Despite the fact that no one can show us to have committed a crime, evidently we can show that a crime has been committed against us. And yet still, Guantanamo continues. I see in this audience people who were fighting for my release and the release of others well before Guantanamo became a subject that everybody wanted to get involved in. And I have to thank you all, because without your courage and without your involvement and what you did to members for my own family and others, they would have been alone. Nobody would have stood with them. And this is the lesson of the 10 years of Guantanamo, is that when you see somebody suffering and under oppression, if you don't stand with them, then who will stand for you? That's the lesson that I learned from all of you who were involved right from the beginning. And I don't have enough words to thank you for it, but the fight's not over. And as I said, for some, imagine for Shaka Rama, I have to keep saying his name because we were closest of friends. His son was born at the same time as mine was, only that 3 years later, at least I saw mine, 10 years later, Shaka's son doesn't even know who he is. Neither do the other children, to be honest with you. They were too young to remember. So this has destroyed those lives. And there is no way to regain all of that. And once, inshallah, once he's released, I want somebody here to come and tell me, or anywhere else, how is he going to rebuild that life? How is he? What's the process? What's the technique? What is the system that someone's going to come along and teach him and say, this is how you now become a father again? And the way that we survived as prisoners, those of us who had wives and children, was to tell ourselves every single day, you are not a father, you are not a husband, you are not a son, you are nobody, you are just a number. Because if you fall into the trap of thinking of your relatives, then it will destroy you. And so people come out of Guantanamo, perhaps appearing very strong, and we are strong based upon our personal beliefs, our faith and our resilience. But inside, what happens in the middle of the night, only we know and those who are closest to us know, and it's not pretty. And how Shaka would have to deal with that, and how the other 171 would have to deal with that, nothing. No amount of compensation, no amount of counseling, no amount of sympathy will be able to ever replace that. So 10 years of Guantanamo. I really hoped that this would have been it, but I don't see any light at the end of this tunnel. I don't know where the next step is when you try to do everything that you can to fight for the people who are still there. And again, I have to defer to the resilience of those who are stronger than me, those who started from the beginning and are still there, those who are still campaigning. I don't know where you get your strength from, because for me, it's almost come to the point that I can't do anymore. But I don't want to end on a pessimistic note. What I have seen from people who have been involved in this process, to my left and to my right and in front of me, is that you carry on. You'll continue. You'll fight the good fight and ensure that, just like our project that we've begun in Cage Prisoners, that we'll never forget. La Tansa, never forget.
And that has been one of the leading organization which has gathered together numerous American lawyers to fight a fight which has been unbelievably depressing, because they got kicked back at every turn over this whole period. And Michael himself has been, in a sense, the moral figure at the center of it all. And for anyone who ever felt like giving up or not doing too much, you only had to look at Michael to realize that you actually had to do much more. So, Michael.
Thank you all for being here. Thank you particularly to Cage Prisoners and my good friend Mozam and Victoria. Victoria said I should say a little bit about how we began. Of course, the person at the end there, Clyde, or almost the end, I thought for a while that he was an American lawyer until he came back here. But he was one of the three lawyers who began representing Guantanamo detainees immediately. And it was very difficult in the United States. There were really only three or four of us to begin. The country was as angry as they could ever be. No one wanted us to take the cases. When we took them, I would get hundreds of pieces of hate mail. Send your children down to Guantanamo. Let the Taliban eat them. I mean, really terrible, terrible stuff. And so I don't want to just talk about, you know, the courage of taking it, but there were these three or four people, Clive and Reprieve, were the people there at the very beginning, and they remain there today. And as Mozam says, it's not easy. It's not easy to have almost every legal avenue now really closed. But what makes it easier, really, is having a group like this here tonight, and as Victoria mentioned, others all over the world. And in fact, it's much greater even than Victoria said. There are right now in the United States 350 demonstrations in solidarity with and protesting Guantanamo right now. As we speak, there are thousands of people in Washington. I think at least hundreds of those people are in the orange jumpsuits. They're making a train from the White House all the way to the Supreme Court and over to Congress. So it's massive. So while the Guantanamo prison remains open after 10 years, the 171 people remaining at Guantanamo are not alone. And hopefully, we will not be having an 11th anniversary for Guantanamo. Today, tomorrow, next week, and next year, we have to never forget. The expression that Cage Prisoners uses, La Tansa, never forget. Never forget the 779 people that were sent to Guantanamo. Never forget the 171 that are still there. And what's remarkable is that the 171 89 are people that, and I hesitate to call it my own country, but that my own country has actually cleared for release. And yet they have been there day after day for 10 years. 46 are there in a way in which I never in my legal life would have expected people would ever be held. 46 are there indefinitely detained, potentially forever. 32 are there supposedly for prosecution. When? Next year, the year after? By what means? Not an American regular court, but a rump court called the Military Commissions. We must never forget those, and never forget those that are sent elsewhere, to Bagram and who knows where else. We must never forget those tortured and those murdered by targeted assassination and by drones, the program today again beginning in Pakistan, the drone killings. Today is the 10th anniversary. We're entering the 11th year. There should not have been a first anniversary, much less a 10th. 10 years ago, my children were 11 and 13 years old. I've been with them and helped them grow into adults. It's probably the greatest pleasure I've ever had. Shakar Amar and others still in cages have been deprived of that fundamental human right to raise their families. Guantanamo and places like it have been legal and moral outrages since inception. They were set up as torture centers, and they were set up to be beyond the law. Each day anyone is in Guantanamo is one day too many. As a lawyer in New York, if one of my clients spends an extra day in prison, I'm in court the next morning to get them out on a writ of habeas corpus. Any extra day is considered an outrage. How do we accept? How does the world accept 10 years of extra days, 3,650 extra days with no end in sight? We must not accept it, and we will not accept it. I ask myself, how did Gitmo get there? Why is it there? And I'm convinced that Gitmo and other places like Gitmo only exist because its detainees are Muslims. I can't imagine a Christian Gitmo. I can't imagine a Jewish Guantanamo. It exists because of Islamophobia. It exists because in the United States, the Muslims are the others. You probably, most of you recall Bush's first talk about this. What he said was, this crusade, this war on terrorism, is going to take a while. And what did we get out of the American government? We got a crusade. And it continues in the roundups of the innocent, in the deportations of the innocent, in the FBI being in every mosque in the United States, in prosecutions by entrapment, in wars all over the Middle East, and of course, Guantanamo. And did we have hopes that it would be different than when the Democrats took office? Of course we did. Obama promised to close Guantanamo. Is it better? Is it different? Well, Guantanamo is still there. In fact, the longest period of no releases from Guantanamo, almost 12 months, has been under President Obama. And I don't expect releases for a very long time, and still after the next presidential election. What of Obama's promise to close Guantanamo, to close it in a year? I remember when he signed the paper, made on January 22, 2009. Huge fanfare, all these generals surrounding him. Promises to close it in a year. My office says, what are you talking about, a year? This place should be closed in 3 months. It should be closed tomorrow. You either charge people or you release them. 3 years after Obama's promise, an unequivocal promise, we are still here. And there is no real chance of my country currently planning to close it. Some say it was Congress that prevented the president from closing Guantanamo. But don't let Obama off the hook. The first case The first situation, the first decision he had to make was a decision about the Uyghurs from Western China, Muslims from Western China. A federal court orders them into the United States. There's a Uyghur community in Washington willing to take them. What does Obama say? No Congress is in the picture at this point. What does Obama say? They're not coming in. What that did, that weakness of Obama, was like a green light to the forces of darkness. So now we have Obama, the courts, and the Congress, none of them willing to close it. The latest outrage, of course, was the signing of the National Defense Authorization Act. Obama said he would veto it. He signed it on New Year's. That funds all our military in the United States. But it also makes, now the new act makes closing harder. It puts all kinds of restrictions on getting people out of Guantanamo, and it also sets up a permanent indefinite detention scheme in the United States. So it's very difficult to close Guantanamo after this law, and of course, new Guantanamos can be created. Many people in the United States were relieved that Obama said he would not arrest and detain indefinitely any U.S. citizens under the act. I said, what? They're willing to detain everybody else in the world, but not U.S. citizens? What kind of justice is that? And then I just want to read what Obama said. What he said was, moreover, I want to clarify that my administration will not authorize the indefinite military detention without trial any American citizen. And then a shocking line. Indeed, I believe that doing so would break with our most important traditions and values as a nation. What is that saying? Except that our values as a nation are only to protect our own. Do unto others not as you want done to yourselves. No one should be at Guantanamo. Every human being has fundamental rights. Fundamental rights, charges, to a trial, to go to a court, and to get released. There's no exceptions, absolutely none. So in this dire picture, but of course it's dire, but of course we have, some 700 have gotten out of Guantanamo. There's 350 actions going on around the world. What do we do? We do more of what we've been doing for 10 years, but we do so with the understanding that the powers, the 1%, the governments, will not end Guantanamo on their own. They are no goodwill. They must, by all of us here and all of us around the world, be forced to do so. We must act with the understanding, as our great American abolitionist Frederick Douglass said and reminds us, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Our demand, without compromise, is to shut Guantanamo down. We must never forget. La Tanza, and thank you.
Because Wednesday is the 10th anniversary. I'm edited it a little bit so as to leave plenty of time for all the speakers. More Atticoness. I left Guantanamo Bay much as I had arrived almost 5 years earlier, shackled hand to waist, waist to ankles, ankles to a bolt on the airplane floor. My eyes and ears were goggled, my head hooded, and even though I was the only detainee on the flight, I was drugged and guarded by at least 10 soldiers. I later learned that my C-17 military flight from Guantanamo to Ramstein Air Base in my country, Germany, cost more than $1 million. When we landed, the American officers unshackled me before they handed me over to a delegation of German officials. The American officer offered to reshackle my wrists with a fresh plastic pair, but the commanding German officer strongly refused. He has committed no crime. Here, he is a free man. I'm not a terrorist. I've never been a member of Al-Qaeda or supported them. I don't even understand their ideas. In 2001, when I was 18, I married a devout Turkish woman and I wanted to learn more about Islam and lead a better life. I did not have much money. Some of the elders in my town, Bremen, suggested I travel to Pakistan to learn to study the Quran with a religious group. I was in Pakistan on a public bus on my way to the airport to return to Germany, and the police stopped the bus I was riding in. They detained me, and after a few days, the Pakistani police turned me over to American officials. I later learned that the United States paid a $3,000 bounty for me. Apparently, the United States distributed thousands of flyers all over Afghanistan, promising that people who turned over Taliban or Qaeda suspects would, in the words of one flyer, get enough money to take care of your family, your village, your tribe, for the rest of your life. A great number of men wound up in Guantanamo as a result. I was taken to Kandahar in Afghanistan, where American interrogators asked me the same questions for several weeks. During their interrogations, they dumped my head underwater and punched me in the stomach. They don't call this waterboarding, but it amounts to the same thing. At one point, I was chained to the ceiling of a building and hung by my hands for days. The pain was unbearable. I was transferred to Guantanamo. There were more beatings, endless solitary confinement, freezing temperatures, extreme heat, days of forced sleeplessness. The interrogations continued always with the same questions. I realized my interrogators were not interested in the truth. After 2.5 years in Guantanamo in 2004, I was brought before what officials call a combatant status review tribunal, at which a military officer said I was an enemy combatant because, he said, a German friend had engaged in a suicide bombing in 2003, after I was already in Guantanamo. A couple of weeks later, I was told I had a visit from a lawyer. They took me to a cell, and in walked an American law professor, Bahar Azmi. I didn't believe he was a real lawyer. At first, interrogators often lied to us and tried to trick us. But Mr. Azmi had a note written in Turkish, which he'd gotten from my mother, and that made me trust him. My mother had found a lawyer in my hometown in Germany who heard that lawyers at the Center for Constitutional Rights represented Guantanamo's detainees. The center assigned Mr. Azmi my case. He did not believe the evidence against me and quickly discovered that my suicide bomber friend was in fact alive and well in Germany. Now, 5 years after my release, I'm trying to put my terrible memories behind me. I have remarried and I have a beautiful baby daughter. It's hard not to think about my time in Guantanamo. It's hard to think how it is possible that a democratic government can detain people in intolerable conditions and without a fair trial. Thank you.
Our next speaker. very, very beginning of all of this. She's very well known to everybody here, the veteran of so many incredible campaigns against miscarriages of justice, and she's the lawyer of many of the former prisoners here, Gareth Pearce.
Just to speak briefly this evening about the UK and its responsibility, and about the UK resident who is not here tonight, Chaka Onma. If people ask you, why is it Chaka Onma isn't back? Another good question to ask back is, why is Guantanamo still there? The answers are very similar. If you make yourself read, which is a hard thing to do, but if you make yourself read the memoirs of the Prime Minister of the time, Tony Blair, it tells you everything you need to know. He reminisces and says, when I saw the pictures of the Twin Towers, the planes going into the Twin Towers, I understood everything. I saw it all. I saw splashes of colour that I had never realised were previously joined up, were all one colour together. Kashmir, Palestine, Algeria, Yemen. These were the enemy. He defined them, defines them, continues to define them to this day as the enemy, Islamists, political Islam. Huge sweeps of groups and people, political interests, religious interests, all together made the enemy, an enemy who declared no war, but upon whom he declared war. And so, if we want to begin to think how a devout Muslim, Chaka Onma, who belonged here, belongs here, is still there, the answer lies in that. Because from then on, for 10 years, led by that thinking, the thinking that defined our foreign and our domestic policies, led by that, our governments successively have done everything in their power to collude with the concept of Guantanamo. They've lied, they've cheated, they've falsified evidence, they've fabricated evidence, they've colluded in torture, they've colluded in arbitrary, unlawful, indefinite detention, crimes against humanity. Crimes against humanity for which they could and should stand prosecuted. And if they were prosecuted, you could be sure no government would collude again in the same way. Guantanamo could never have perpetuated itself, never, if it had not had the endorsement of countries around the world. But the primary endorser was this country and our government. And if you see, finally disclosed grudgingly, litigation, email traffic within the cabinet at the time, the first days, the anniversary, this grotesque memorial we're having to hold today of Guantanamo opening, at the same time, the internal email traffic within the cabinet, Blair, Straw, Blunkett. The longer they go there, the longer they stay there, the better. This suits our purposes, the UK's national security purposes. For my part, I don't want them to come back. But at the same time, meeting the families, looking them in the eye, saying we're doing all that we can to get Moise and them back. To Mr. Begg, his father, or to Shafiq Rasool. The Americans will tell us nothing. But the email traffic saying, keep them there in Afghanistan just a week longer before they go to Guantanamo, so MI5 agents
can interrogate them there. And so they did, Shaka Amma, in the freezing cold of an Afghan winter, disused aircraft hangar. Men sitting in frozen positions as if they were frozen, stress positions, made to sit there day after day and patrolling along the razor wire, two by two, in their North Face jackets, wits. They saw it all, they heard it all, the torture. They were there to get the pickings for us, for us. So Guantanamo, when they say, and they will say, we can't get Shaka back, this is what they said about Moise. Can't get him back. What they said about Bishop Harawi and Jamil Albana, who were not British nationals, we won't get them back. And they said it until public pressure compelled them to get them back. But Shaka, who was disadvantaged, he had no lawyers for many years in Guantanamo, no lawyers here. So at the very moment, the pressure is too great, and Binyam Mohammed comes back here, at that very moment, our representatives are sitting down with the Americans and with the Saudis to get Shaka back to Saudi Arabia from one form of indefinite detention to another form of unlawful, totally unlawful future for him. That's what we colluded in. So if you ask anyone, what did you do? What are you doing to get him back? And they tell you, we can't, it's difficult, the Americans won't let him. Don't believe a word of it, not a word. And the new coalition government came in, softer term, muted language, we're going to do all that we can to draw a line under the past. They have done nothing. They have achieved nothing. Next week, we have what is called an e-petition, a device which if 100,000 people sign up to it, Parliament is obliged to have a debate. When that is published, I ask everybody in this room to ask everybody they know to sign up to it. February 13th is another terrible date. It's the date when Shaka Amma was moved from torture in Bagram to torture in Guantanamo. On that date, February the 13th, he will have been there for 10 years in Guantanamo. And we could have got him back, and we can get him back. 100,000 signatures to a petition is nothing. By February the 13th, we could get 10 times that. And then, could this government say, we can't, we won't? It would be a demand from the nation that we do. And be sure, if we can't get it, our closest ally, the Americans, saying, we won't. And what is that? It's a declaration of